Welcome to the Football Union Podcast, the go-to podcast for all things football. Not soccer. It's proudly brought to you by the fans, for the fans, and with the fans. Voila! What's up, everybody? This is Tuesday Talking Points with Football Union. And we'll be looking at all the things that happened in the weekend and breaking it down for you all. With me, I have some special guests, Shego at the corner, Sao at the other corner, Haroon, Hunter, and Ads will be joining me for the next 1 hour, breaking down some things. So without further ado, let's start this thing. So Sao, how are you doing, man?
How are you doing, Leonard? I'm doing fine. Thank you for having me here to talk about the Arsenal.
Yes. So what's going on? What happened during your weekend game? Like, what happened? Like, you guys, we're expecting you guys to win so that you guys can close that gap between you and Chelsea, because Chelsea fumbled the bag last weekend, but seems like you guys didn't take the opportunity.
For me, obviously, this past game, I didn't go into it with a lot of confidence, you know, considering the Thomas Partey injury and Tierney being out. And it all started with the Crystal Palace game. That was a must-win game, a game where we were expected to win. We expected, as fans, to, of course, win that game. And, yeah, we were pretty much nullified by Patrick Vieira, a legend. As you recall, he took Thomas Partey completely out of the game. And, yeah, we were pretty much bullied by Palace. Coming into the Brighton game, of course, we had a lineup of the usual suspects in Ramsdale, Cedric, Ben White and Gabriel. The biggest shock, if you're new to the Arsenal, of course, a lot of us weren't shocked, is the fact that he started Granit Xhaka as a left back and took out Tavares, who of course had a bad game. He had a terrible first half against the Crystal Palace, and you know, he was subbed off at half time against Palace and completely, you know, snubbed in this game. Granit Xhaka starting at left back, Lokonga and Odegaard playing at the pivot, and we had Bukayo Saka, Martinelli, Smith Rowe and Lacazette. To me, obviously, the start of that game was very, how do you call it, lackadaisical. It was very slow. We weren't really beating them to any of the 50-50 challenges. Brighton looked pretty comfortable and they grew into the game pretty fast. And you saw it was a beautiful, beautiful performance by some of their players and the goals they scored. 2-0, 2-1, and even the goal we scored, it was sort of a lucky goal. And yeah, we ended up, you know, heads down. And I think for me, honestly, this team, when we get to a point where we're missing one or two players, it's very tough. You know, we kind of revert back to the old Arsenal. A lot of mistakes. No one's holding anyone accountable. The manager's decisions are very, very questionable. I think Brighton probably felt no threat from us in that 90 minutes, and they were, it's Brighton. We all know they're going to play their beautiful football. You know, they're going to pass the ball, they're going to move the ball. At the same time, they can do the aggressive part of the game and you know, beat it to every single half volley or, you know, whatever they can to, you know, put you off your game, they will do that. And Arsenal were pretty much taken advantage of in every way. Lokonga, Smith Rowe, and Odegaard midfield. That is shocking for me, man. That kind of sums up this manager. For me, it feels like sometimes okay. you can experiment with players, but I feel like in these type of moments of the season, you have to play your, you know, players where they belong. And Granit Xhaka should have started in that midfield. So yeah. That was my takeaway from that game.
Okay, so one sec, Sal. Like, looking at what you said, You spoke about accountability. You spoke about the way you were speaking about Arteta, the undertone there. I can see that you're frustrated with his tactics. Do you think his tactics were one of the, some like part of the reasons why you guys were not able to get all 3 points against Brighton?
Yes. To be fair to him, obviously, you know, in the world of football, there's nothing you can do about injuries. You know, sometimes when your best players get injured, you know, you have to, as a manager, improvise. You have to be able to try something else. And I feel like, you know, Arteta's main plan, if it doesn't work, then he doesn't have anything else outside of that main plan. And I feel like, you know, in that game, we pretty much played similar lines, and the way we were moving the ball and the things that we were trying, you can see that, you know, we did create a few chances, and you can see it's the same thing that we've been doing all season that's been working for us. However, the difference is you have completely different personnel. You have youngsters. You have Lokonga in that midfield who hasn't played many games all season. A player that started the season, I remember he started the first three games of the season where we lost all three. And I think two of them were, he came on. I just don't think Arteta kind of, I don't think he did enough to help the team when we're struggling with players being out. If you can't improvise and if you can't deal with the adversity when you have players missing, when you have injuries, then of course, you know, it's going to be on you and you're going to get a lot of the blame. I blame him. I give him a big chunk of the blame. Of course, the Granit Xhaka one was the one that stands out for me. At the same time, the players themselves they have to get blamed. You know, I'm a very, very big supporter and I rave about them, you know, our youngsters, you know, Kayo Saka, Martinelli, Smith Rowe, Odegaard. You know, I understand that we have, you know, players that are talented that we can rely on, that have been doing it for us all season. And to be fair, we wouldn't be in a position where, you know, we're disappointed to be missing out on top four. You know, if it wasn't for these guys, they're the reason why we're here in the first place. However, if you have to, you know, if you can't continue to do it when it matters the most, then there is really a big problem there. I feel like Saka was not the player that we had seen in the last few games against Palace, against Brighton. He's been, you know, very, very hesitant, you know, decision making. You know, he's not the guy that we've been relying on all season. Martinelli, he's enormous, man. That guy, he has all the energy, you know, all the effort. He wants to do it. He has the tenacity. But the problem is, he has no idea how he can help this team where to be. You look at Smith Rowe; he's been flying high all season. That form has gone out the window now. You know, he had a few injuries. He came back now. He's not the same guy anymore. You know, he's a lot of mistakes on the ball. Odegaard himself, he gave that ball away so many times. And I said Lokonga, he's the only one I can really sympathise with and say, you know, he hasn't played enough this season and he's been thrown in there. But the other guys, I have to put some of the blame on them as well. Of course, I have to put some blame on Gabriel. That's the guy that I've been raving about all season. You know, I've been saying that he's one of the best defenders in this league this year. And of course, you know, he's been playing very well next to Ben White. And now that Tierney's out and he's having to play next to Tavares and Xhaka, he's been having terrible performances. Very shocking for me, man. He's led to a lot of the mistakes that caused the goals and, you know, being out of position. I remember that goal against Palace, against Brighton as well. One of the goals he had a big part to play. And the players also get the blame. So it's not just the manager for me. The players and the manager get the blame. And I feel like, you know, for us to come out of this slump, for us to, because back-to-back losses in a period where our neighbours next door are flying high and scoring goals everywhere, I feel like it's a very, very dangerous territory to be in. And I feel like for us to come out of this, the players have to step up. They have to hold themselves accountable. They have to be responsible. And the manager himself, he has to stop questioning his decisions. He needs to be a professional. He needs to understand that a midfielder cannot play in a full-back's position. And as much mistakes Tavares makes, he is the left-back that's left in the team. He has to play in his position. You have to start him as a left back. That is his position. And you have to start the only experienced midfielder we have in the team, Granit Xhaka, where he belongs in that midfield. And I hope he gets that right in the next game, because if he doesn't, then there's literally no room for error, in my opinion, Leonard.
Okay. So you touched on so many things, but let me just break that down into two parts so we move on. So you touched on your attacking players, your forward line.
So I'm looking at it this way, that there was a stat that came out, goal scoring has been part of you guys' issue. So since Aubameyang left your club, he has 10 goals, and Arsenal too have only scored 12. So do you think, like, in the long run, Arteta and the board decision to get rid of Aubameyang was a good decision? Because when you look at it, they didn't bring a replacement, and you guys now have to now rely on Lacazette and Nketiah for the rest of the season.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from with that question, and, you know, obviously, you know, if you look at it from a wider angle, then you can say yes. You know, he's a goal scorer, and of course, you know, he's a player that we could use. But I remember we had Aubameyang. He wasn't performing for us, and he was a big part of the problem in terms of creating these chances. And we were actually creating more chances and scoring more goals when he wasn't in the team. However, I do 100% agree that it was a mistake letting Aubameyang go, because, you know, even though it wasn't working out, even though he wasn't scoring the goals, I remember at the time it was a period where Lacazette was helping the team more than Aubameyang. However, there is no way you can rely on Lacazette to continue that. Even though he wasn't scoring goals, he was helping the team in other areas. Now, as a manager, you cannot look at that and think, okay, this is enough for me to go to a top four, to go into a top four race and let Aubameyang go. So someone like Aubameyang at this very moment, if he was in that squad against a Brighton, against a Crystal Palace, where you're 1-0 down or you're 2-0 down, that's a player you can bring on. And whether he plays good or whether he plays bad, if you have these chances, then he is, you know, going to at least, you know, be a threat, at least have defenders distracted. And I feel like that's a mistake that we made, a huge mistake. We didn't even bring in a. Sorry about that. We didn't even bring in a player for Aubameyang. Had we let Aubameyang go to Barcelona and brought in a striker, then of course, you know, that this conversation wouldn't even make sense. But letting Aubameyang go, and not just Aubameyang, other players too, and not bringing in replacements or, you know, at least squad players for depth, is a big issue. It's almost like the club didn't worry about injuries. The club didn't worry about, you know, goal droughts. And yes, in terms of the goal scoring, there's a very good stat that's been going around all week, and that's since Conte coming to Spurs, he scored more goals. Tottenham has scored more goals than Arsenal have all season long, bro. And that just shows you that it's been a story this season. It's been the story of the whole year. Goals are very hard to come by at the Emirates. It's very hard for us to especially do it away. And the thing that's been going for us all season that we could rely on was our defence and our midfield. You know, our midfield was actually finally coming into a position where we could rely on these guys to not lose the ball, to you know, control the game. And our defence was very solid. Now, slowly but surely, the Tomiyasu injury earlier in the season, and now the team is out, now that Partey is out, you can clearly see that these guys are, you know, struggling to deal with these holes. And of course, these are not players that are easily replaced. However, you still have to have some sort of plan in January to, you know, at least think about what could possibly happen and be better prepared. Because I can see that some other clubs have brought in a few signings that had huge impact on their season so far. So, yeah, I think it was a big mistake letting Aubameyang go.
Okay, fair enough. So, one last question before we move on from Arsenal. So, given the injuries, the situation that we've seen, manager trying to close holes by putting players out of position, given all of that stuff going behind the scenes, and given the goal scoring situation, do you still think Arsenal have it in them or have what it takes to finish in the top four, considering the remaining fixtures of the season?
I mean, so for me personally, at the very start of the season, you know, I did not think we would even get in this top six, you know. However, after the run that we've had, after the way we've been playing all season long, I believe that this team could get top four. And there were even moments in the season, you know, not even too long ago, that I actually was very, very confident that we could seal this top four. And looking at the situation now and where we are, I think it's very, very difficult for this team to get top four. Our schedule compared to Spurs' schedule and the games that we have coming up, on top of the way we are playing and the players that we are missing, I think, I'll be very deluded to say that we can get this top four. So, yeah, in my opinion, Leonard, I think that the top four dream is completely over at this point, in my opinion, anyway. Thank you, bro.
I find that interesting because, like, you still have Chelsea, Manchester United, even Spurs.
West Ham.
I think the top four. I think the top four is still in you guys' hands. So far, you guys are able to come out with those points in those crucial games.
I understand that, but we just lost to Crystal Palace and Brighton. Those weren't Chelsea. That's not United. That's not Liverpool or Spurs. Those are teams that we should simply take care of and get those 3 points. We have to go to Waha Lane. We have West Ham away. Manchester United will come to the Emirates. We have Chelsea coming to the Emirates. We are going to Stafford. Actually, no, I think they are coming to the Emirates. There are a lot of games that, with the way we played against Crystal Palace and Brighton and the squad that we have available now, it's very difficult to see anything but, a loss. And at the same time, what you have to keep in mind is the team that we are competing against on this top four and the run they are going on at this moment. You know, I'm going to let the super fan Shagun himself talk about the team, and they are flying high at this moment. So I don't see those guys allowing us to drop points and remain in this race. I feel like every point dropped will be 3 points that Spurs will get, and eventually it will be too big of a gap for us to have any real chance, in my opinion.
All right. So fair enough. It's come. I understand you. So going on to the other side of London, the Spurs side, the white side. So Spurs have been racking up victories here and there. Yes, they've been consistent. So Shago, tell us how come they've stepped into this vein of form at the clutch part of the season.
Leonard, it's quite simple. It's Conte's had time to do his work. He's been up until now, people forget, he came in November and we had back-to-back games because we were still in that silly European competition, and then we're going into the Christmas period where you got back-to-back games. He's never had a chance to actually coach these, but some of these rubbish players and transform them into, little diamonds. Now, he's had that time where he's got one game a week, just like Arteta has had time to have one game a week to train his players, and he's getting a tune out of them. He's getting them to do what he wants them to do. That's the only reason. It's just hard work and dedication. Simple things. Hard work, dedication. Some clubs need to take a leaf out of our book, Manchester United, Arsenal. Hard work, dedication. That's what it's needed.
Okay. I see you trying to change. But moving on, there are two things I want to ask. What do you think, Antonio Conte, like, what has impressed you the most? Because I find it interesting that there are some players that were fringe, that were underperforming, and I think they were finished at Spurs. And right now, they're playing well. So two questions. Who do you think is the most improved player under Conte? And what do you think Antonio Conte has done to bring back the best of Harry Kane that was seen recently?
Okay. The most improved player under Conte has to go down to Matt Doherty. So much so, he's now out for the season, and certain Spurs fans are crying that the top four is out of reach just because he's not going to be playing, even though a month ago, people would have been begging for him not to play. but he's definitely been the most improved. He, and given him fairness, he's got 5 assists and I think 1 goal in a lot in the last 7 or so games. So for me, he's the most improved player without a shadow of a doubt. Even though I was looking at it like that's a big loss, him being out for the season, but we move on. We don't worry about injuries too much like other people. Let them cry about their injuries. We just move on to the next game. But with regards to Harry Kane, I would say that the thing that he's got able to get, reason why he's got able to get a tune out of Harry Kane is he's got him fit again. If you look at his face and compare the two, he's on it again. You can see he's training harder than he's probably done for the last couple of years. He looks fitter, number one, so he can do more. Number two, he's got quality around him. So he's making sure that people are making runs at the right time around him so he can do his passing, which we all know is elite, which we all know is world class. But he's got people who can do that. Now, the other players are stepping up their game. You've had Son, who's had a good season, more or less for the whole season, stepping up another level, going, right, I can be player of the season kind of level. That's what he's going for. Then you've got the introduction of Kulusevski, and you have to say it's been a revelation. We finally got the third piece to our three-piece attack. We've always had just a two-piece. You know, we've had is a two-piece of chicken and chips. Now we've got corn on the cob on the side. It's a delicious meal. You've got to try it, then. You've got to try it.
I see. But moving on to the players you mentioned, Kulusevski and I think Bentancur as well.
Oh yeah, of course. I missed Bentancur.
When you guys made those signings, a lot of we're seeing a lot of
let's put it hate.
Some people were not quite feeling that transfer because when you look at the team they were coming from, Juventus, Bentancur wasn't really starting. Same thing with Kulusevski, you know. And we're looking at it like this transfer, is it going to bang or not? So how well do you think those two players have done for your club?
Two have done excellent. As I said, Kulusevski has become the third part of our attack that we've been crying for the last 3 years. Bentancur has been the glue that's been sticking it all together from attack, defence to attack. They've come in and transformed our season. Just like what is interesting is that you know you've got the Christmas the winter window came through and it was where you make your stick a twist. Some clubs didn't do nothing. They just let people go. We decided to venture in, put our money where our mouth is, and buy some players that we needed. And it's paid off. Other clubs sat there angry and jealous and started bad mouthing our players, like, you know, certain northern clubs that begin with M, their fan base, you know, they all dress in, they wear red majority of the time. They were saying, Kulusevski who, Benton who, these guys are bums, they can't play, they don't play for Juventus, but yet they're out here screaming for Donny van de Beek to come and save their season. But yet, you know, what's he doing at Everton? Anyway, I digress. Back to these two players. They've done unbelievably well. They've stood out. Kulusevski, he could be in the team of the season at this rate. This is how well he's playing. So there's a long way to go, but where we are now, it's good business, and no one can deny that.
Okay. So one last question about those guys. Given the way they've performed, so will you be okay if those signings are made permanent?
No. It's not if they become permanent. It's when. One is already permanent. So we bought Bentancur. We didn't loan him. We bought him £20-something million. And then Kulusevski is a loan with an obligation to buy if certain key factors come into it. So if we make Champions League this season, we have to buy him. And if he plays like 60% of the games between now and the end of next season, we have to buy him in the summer of that following season. But let's be honest, he's 21 years old, he's only getting better, he's flying at the moment. We're going to sign him. There's no shadow of a doubt. Because if you don't, those other clubs, especially the ones beginning with M, who are desperate for good players who play on the wing, they're going to be looking to try and buy him on the sly and trying to put, you know, so it's going to get done. I've got no problem with that. It's who else is going to come along with it for the ride. Because this is a ride that's going to go up, up, and up.
All right. I see in the back chat that some people are not happy with your shorts that you're trying. What? Don't worry, they'll get their chance to throw their own shot.
You can say that they could have their chance to shot, but they've been shooting all for the last four games, not scoring no goals. So whatever shots they've got from you, they can have, but they better come with that incorrect because they've got no shots at the moment. But go on.
Okay. So talk to me about the game you guys played in the weekend against Aston Villa. Like, I was looking at the link up between Kane and Son once again. Fantastic. Mm. What were you impressed by the most in that game, and what do you think Spurs should work on going forward into the season?
So what I was impressed with the most, the Kane Son thing, that's standard to be honest. It's just telepathic. They've been doing it for so long, they know what they're doing. Kulusevski as well has joined in, and he seems to have caught onto their wavelength as well and added to the party. But the thing I was impressed with is when Aston Villa brought it, because let's not get twisted, Aston Villa brought the pain. They were on it. Gerrard was doing his thing, doing his British bulldog thing. I don't know where he learned this, go get at him football. I don't know what he used to be a skills man from what I know, but at the moment, all he's talking about is getting stuck in and being aggressive. And that's what he told his players to go do, and they were flying into tackles that were borderline red cards. But we stood up to that heat, stood up, and many people in this room will be like, oh, look, Spursy, but we weren't Spursy then. When they were flying in with 2-foot tackles, late challenges, we stood up and we counted and we showed our strength. And we went, you know what? We're not going to fold under this pressure. We're not going to let you score. In fact, we're going to let you blow your load, and then we're going to bust you next after the second half. And that's what we did. So we took all their shots. Nothing went in. And then what did we do? We hit with another three after the break. So that's what I was impressed with the most.
Okay. So
go on.
Okay. All right. Go on. You're still
season. Yeah. Just that what they got to prove on the season is that many teams now, they're gonna try and outmuscle us, and we can't be the little kids, you know, the youth team football who want to be top four. We gotta be men and stand up for it. And you know, people are gonna come with 2-foot challenges, and we got to say no, not on this watch. Not on Conte's team. That doesn't happen. We stand here and we fight back. We fight fire with fire. And if you come with a high line against us, be prepared to get hit. Because we will smoke anybody who's come with a high line against us.
I see what you're doing, Shaggy. Okay, fair enough. So before we move on from Spurs, one last question. So I'm looking at the form you guys are on, and I think it's fantastic. Mm. And I'm looking at the remainder, the rest of the fixtures you guys have for the rest of the season. And I'm splitting it into two ways. I think 4 games are games against teams that most likely you guys can win. And the remaining 4 are games that I think that you guys can definitely draw points from. And I'm looking at it like you guys still face teams that are in and around the conversation for top 4 and, you know, title challengers.
What teams are those?
You know the team I'm talking about. Let's not act like we don't know what we're talking about. So, but basically, my question is now, in those 8 games that are remaining, do you think you guys can push through and get the points needed to secure top 4?
I would say, I'm going to give the bog standard boring answer. We've got to take one game at a time. Because many people, in this whole race, we've seen people have got ahead of themselves, like counting points, saying, oh, you know what? If we win 2, 3, 4 more games, we're going to be 1 point behind Chelsea, put pressure on them, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Right now, our next game is Brighton. We need to show people how to beat Brighton at home. That's all our focus needs to be. Nothing else. All of this, like, yeah, we've got to win this game and that game, and hold on, if we beat the game before Arsenal and this game and that game, and we've got Liverpool soon, no. Our next game is Brighton, we win that game. Because that, what we'll do, that will put pressure on the rest of them to follow us, because we go first. We're the 12:30 kickoff. We win that game, we can bust their pipes, because you know when they come to their game and they've already seen that we won, they can't play under that pressure. These kids can't play under that pressure. I'm not calling the old guys in Manchester, because they don't want to play anyway. So, but that's their problem. But these young kids down the road, down Seven Sisters Road, pressure's been put on them, and they're crumbling at the moment. We just need to put the last little, you know, last little bits, pieces of gravel on their grave and put them to sleep.
All right, fantastic. Shaggy with the political answer. He never said yes or no. So one game at a time. So thank you, Shagun. So moving on, let's go to Manchester United, the other challengers for the top four.
It's a challenge.
So Haroon, how are you doing, man? So we've seen Manchester United, you know, they've been very, very inconsistent this season. They gave Frank Lampard a victory. Frank Lampard has been starving for a victory in a long time. They basically saved Frank Lampard's job. So I'm looking at it this way, that like, do you guys have do you guys have enough in the tank to actually get more victories, considering the kind of performance you guys showed at Goodison Park in the weekend? So what do you think about the game in particular?
Well, you asked me when my next victory is coming, and I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know when. I don't even think we can win a game until the end of the season, because these guys, they mentally checked out, man. I mean, Everton, I thought we were going to get points against. Leicester, who have been, both teams who have been in probably having the worst seasons of their lives. We stroll into town and then we do nothing. So, next up we got Norwich. I'm going to sit here and say I've got no confidence of getting 3 points against Norwich. That's how bad this team is. So, I mean, unfortunately we handed Frank Lampard 3 points. I don't actually think his job is safe, to be honest with you, because I still think they're a terrible team. But these players are just a bunch of overpaid imbeciles who don't really deserve to be playing at the top level, representing any club, really. Because Everton, form-wise, were probably the worst team in the league. You know? So we go to their home ground and we make them look like, I don't know, what they used to be back in the 70s, title contenders. So I wasn't too impressed with that. What was the other question you asked me, sorry, about was it just the Everton game you asked me about?
Okay, let's just take it one step at a time. So like, what do you think went wrong at that Everton game? Do you think it's the manager tactics, because they keep blaming Radic for some reasons? Do you think it's the players? Like, what was the excuse for them this time?
It wasn't the tactics. I'd say it's a lack of hunger, a lack of desire. Those players go out onto the pitch and every single 50-50 ball, they don't go for it. They don't know how to pass to each other. One thing with Manchester United players is they're so bad that when they actually make a pass, there's never a pass that goes into the stride of the player. So when you pass the ball, you either receive it stationary or you receive it behind you. So that's how bad our passing are. It makes life a lot more easier for you if somebody passes into the stride that you want to go towards, and they can never do that. They can't. They're not even good enough to do that. So every time, you're either going backwards to get the ball or you're standing in the same place with the ball, take a touch, and then you look up. It's too late for that. People are already getting back into their defensive spots. People are already doing what they're doing. So I'd mainly blame it on the lack of hunger. I mean, how can you have less hunger than a team who is probably the worst team in the league? So I think, like I say, these guys are just way too privileged, way too in their heads. And I think it's just down to the player ego, really, of why we lost.
Okay, interesting. I know we can make a full episode of why Manchester United are not playing well, the things wrong with the club and all that, but we're not there for that now. I'm looking at it this way, that you guys need to get rack up victories from now to the end of the season, because if not, you guys will go further down and you guys will be able to even make the Conference League at this point. So what do you think needs to be done so that at least there's still a level of sustainability, them still trying and getting one or two victories that will still keep them in the conversation, even if the top four now seems a bit far from reality?
Well, look, like I said, in terms of top four, I think that died this weekend. Even if we had managed to get a point, which would still have been a bad result against Everton, who, like I said, are the worst team in the league form-wise, we may have been in with a glimmer of hope, but we would have to win probably 5 to 6 of our next, you know, 7 games, and then hope that other teams lose to get top 4 positions. I think the most realistic place that we're going to finish is 6th position. We've got Norwich coming up at home. Like I said, I'm not confident about that game, but we should be able to get 3 points. I said the same thing about Everton. So with this team, with this club, you never know what kind of performance you're going to get. But with that wake-up call of how shocking they were, how the fans reacted, I think that should give them a bit of a wake-up call against Norwich. And then straight after that, we've got Liverpool. So, look, I don't even know if they're going to have enough fire to bring any kind of energy to Liverpool, because they gave us 5 at home, you know, before this season with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And we're probably even in worse form than when we played them. So it could be another massacre, to be honest with you, if we're not careful. We're a team who can't get an early goal. I don't remember the last time that we actually scored a goal in the first 30, 40 minutes. And if you're playing Liverpool and you don't get an early goal, you know, it's going to be difficult from that point onwards. But it's going to hinge down on the Liverpool game. If we manage to not lose that game, then maybe there's a slight glimmer of hope left this season. Because when we come up against Arsenal later on in the season, I'm confident that we can get a result against them. But yeah, I mean, it's all going to boil down very soon in the next few weeks.
All right. So. I see what you mean. A lot of pessimism, but I think you guys still have a good number of games that you guys can get 3 points. Hopefully, I'm right and you're wrong for Manchester United's sake. But moving on, we've seen Maguire receive a lot of hatred off the pitch. He spoke about fans' reaction about that. Okay, you're saying he deserves it. What do you think is the solution for Maguire? Because I think his relationship with the fans has completely broken down. I think the relationship with some of the players on the pitch, it's not there. It has broken down as well. So what do you think is the possible solution here? Do you think he needs time off the team? Or do you think it's come summer, he should be sold or something? What's your own thoughts?
I would love for him to be sold in the summer, but that's not realistic. So I think the best case for him is if he gets dropped. But for some reason, Ranier keeps persisting with him. And it seems every single game that we play this guy, he's at fault somehow, some way, shape or form. You know, I said a few weeks ago when we were in the Champions League, and I said, if we play Maguire in that game, we will lose. And he started. And we lost, you know, and he was at fault for a lot of incidences that was going on. And this game against Everton that just went past, people say, oh, it's not Maguire's fault. It deflected. We all saw the goal. It deflected off of him. And you know how sometimes when a striker's on form and he's getting goals and he's even getting lucky with the goals that he scores, it's the complete opposite way around for Maguire. He's so bad that he makes mistakes, and then even the mistakes that are not really his fault, he's still at fault for. It doesn't make sense. He's so bad that he indirectly costs goals as well as directly costs goals. That's how bad he is. And it doesn't actually even make sense. You know, he'll run, you know, like a deer in the headlights, get caught out of position, and then somehow they'll be on the attack with a one-on-one. You know, he'll lose a header to someone who's smaller than him. So he brings it on himself. Every single thing that he does, he brings it on himself. And then he goes and he plays for England. He scores in a friendly against, you know, Estonia or something like that. Was it Serbia? I don't know who it was. Cups his ears to say, oh, you know, this is me. How do you like me now? He's really, everything he does, he doesn't inspire confidence, you know. And he's the captain as well. So the only way he can make any kind of comeback is if he gets dropped for some games this season. If the new manager comes in, the first thing he has to do is take the captaincy off him, because I think the captaincy doesn't work for this guy. He's not a captain. He's not a captain material. He doesn't lead. He doesn't talk. He doesn't inspire. How can you have a captain who is consistently your worst player? It doesn't make sense. You know? Your captain is supposed to be the most consistent. Listen, if a captain doesn't have leadership qualities, the single only thing that your captain can at least do is bring consistency. So why do you have a captain if he doesn't have leadership skills and he's not consistent? It doesn't make sense. It's a puzzle. Honestly, it's one of the world's mysteries. Can someone tell me? Actually, I really do not understand. So he needs that captaincy taken off of him. The players don't respect him. How can you be Cristiano Ronaldo in a tunnel and you see Harry Maguire with a captain's armband and then think, I respect you? How can you be an opponent in the tunnel, look across you and see Harry Maguire with the captain's armband and think, I'm scared of this guy? You're not scared. You're going to relish it. You're going to relish seeing Harry Maguire in the tunnel with the captain's armband, flicking his hair, thinking he's all that. He's not. He's terrible. You know, so is he going to get dropped? I don't think so. I mean, I hope he gets dropped because Lindelof deserves a chance. When Varane comes back, he deserves a chance. Phil Jones came back for one game, played better than Maguire has all season in one game. People can laugh. That's actually the truth. But yeah, that's what I think on Maguire to be honest with you.
All right. You said something about the next manager coming in. Yeah. And in the last episode, you broke down so many things for us, which I quite enjoyed listening back on the episode we did. If you are listeners, if you guys haven't listened to it, I think you'll find it interesting. So what's the current update on the managerial hunt for Manchester United?
So it looks like that they've selected Ten Hag. Erik Ten Hag is the next manager. However, there's a few things that need to happen before he fully agrees to the terms of Manchester United. So a few days ago, Louis van Gaal came out into the press and he said Manchester United is a commercial club. They're not serious. He came out saying a few things and it looked like it was really bad on us. But actually, I think it was good because it let people know, you know, that, you know, this club is not really serious. The people who are higher ups are not concerned with winning. They're more concerned with social media. And possibly Erik ten Hag, I don't think he was going to cause any effect in him signing or not. But it made him think, this club, you know, is a commercial club. I need to stamp my authority, what I believe in, what I need needs to happen. And he came with a set of rules, Erik ten Hag. He came with a set of rules to Manchester United and he said, listen, I've seen what's happened the past couple of years at Manchester United. You guys are signing this guy, you're signing Fellaini, you're signing Juan Mata, you're signing people who do not suit any kind of specific style. You're going from Mourinho to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to Van Gaal to 3 to 4 different types of styles of football and you're bringing in different players for each. It doesn't come together. So Ten Hag is coming with an idea saying, listen, I'm going to be here for 4 or 5 years. I want to work with people who will let me do what I need to do. I need to know who's coming in. I need to know who's coming out. I need to be the one who's going to be involved with contracts. He really likes Rangnick. So he also needs somebody above him who has that footballing brain that can work with him and can find those scouts specifically suited to the style of play that he likes. So we know he likes a tiki-taka type of formation. So he needs technical players who are confident on the ball, good at receiving the ball, ball on half turns, always got their head on a swivel, looking around, and just generally confident with the ball at their feet. So he's going to want people who can find that type of player for him. And he's going to want to know that he's got full authority. You know, he doesn't want to be in with a job and then all of a sudden, the next day he comes into work and Declan Rice is sitting there being bought for 160 million when he didn't authorize it. So he's come with a set of rules, and I think it's really, really good because this is how I know this is the man that I want for the job. Because if he had just come and just said, okay, I'll take the job, then I would have been concerned. But he's coming with his own rules. He's coming with his own sets of beliefs. And he's telling these lot, listen, this is the way that I want it to happen. You know, I'm one of the hottest prospects in the managerial world right now. Bring me this and I'll bring you something different than what you've had before. And now the Manchester United fan base have realized that this guy is a good manager. He's got his beliefs. And if the owners, if the board mess this deal up now for Erik ten Hag because they didn't give him what he wants, it really shines a light on how bad they are. And it's gonna, I think it's gonna end up bad for them. I think there's gonna be more protests. I think fans are gonna be up in arms because it just goes to show you that they don't want to give full control to a manager. They want to buy players for clicks and social media interactions. So I think it's good. I think he comes with these beliefs, and you know, it's good that a manager comes with something that they want to do and really shake things up at the club, because the club needs a big shake up. You know, you've got, like I say, you know, people who are not 100% playing for the manager, people who down tools for the manager, people who complain about leaving training late because it's dark. It's a real mess at that club, so it needs a big shake up. But I do think that deal's going to be done eventually. I think they are going to agree with what he wants to do. It's just a matter of time, so we'll see what happens.
All right. Thank you very much for that update, and Haroon. So lastly, very, very quickly, what do you make of the Ronaldo incident against Everton?
I don't know what the big deal is. I mean, I think if he slapped the phone out of the kid's hands, yeah, obviously it's bad. But listen, these footballers are humans. You know, they get pissed off, they get annoyed. I think he stomped on his phone, which is a bit overkill. I can't lie. But look, if he says I'm sorry, and he offers this kid, you know, the strange thing is he offered him box seats at Manchester United. I don't know why you'd offer an Everton kid box seats at Manchester United so you can go watch worse football at Manchester United's ground. So I hope he changes that up and gives them something else than watching Manchester United play for 90 minutes, because I'm sure that kid doesn't want to go through that pain. But I don't think it's too much of a big deal. You know, listen, just offer them a night out somewhere. Not a night out as in clubbing, but, you know, a nice restaurant. Maybe an Everton season ticket or something. Call it a day and say, I'm sorry. People don't need to make it a big deal, man. It's not like he fly kicked the kid in his face. So that's what I think.
All right. I respect that. Fair enough. So moving on to one of the supposed challengers before the season started, Chelsea. They've been having a torrid time off the pitch. It seems like it's starting to affect them on the pitch. Lost against Brentford, and you know, and Benzema bagging another hat trick in the Champions League against them as well. But all of a sudden, a surprise result this weekend. They smashed Southampton 6. They smashed 6 goals past Southampton. So Hunter, what do you make of the performance? Are you proud of the bounce that you guys had during the weekend?
It's only against Southampton. When we were required to do it against the big boys, we were not able to do it. Mendy was shitting in his pants. Defenders were just acting crazy. The forwards don't know what to do. Lukaku missing open headers. When I thought it was just some guy wearing the white tee somewhere in London is missing open headers. It was just frustrating, you know, and I didn't know what to say, to be honest. Credit to Benzema, because he's a quality striker, so I'll let that slide. Plus, Real Madrid, they are, they've won the Champions League a lot. So, it is what it is. I'm happy with the performance against the Southampton. I'm also happy with Werner scoring the goals that he did. Because I never give up on him. I hope he's able to bring that form at the Bernabeu when we play Real Madrid again. I think only 5 teams have been able to turn that over in the Champions League, and hopefully Chelsea will be the 6th. I don't think any English club has actually turned over that deficit in the Champions League. But I'll take that performance against Southampton to pick up for albeit it's just 6 goals. Because when it comes to Real Madrid, they defend well, they have quality players, and if you're caught napping like we did last week, you get banged 3 goals by one player.
All right. Interesting. So, I think Hunter is doing his research to see if Chelsea can, you know, turn it back. But I respect that, Franklin. I respect that. Okay. So I'm looking at it this way. Do you think there's any possibility of Chelsea being dragged into this thing, considering that no one seems to understand the kind of form they can show, or the kind of if they could turn up in certain games, because we know that Chelsea has some tough fixtures coming up. So do you think is there any possibility of them being dragged into this top four race?
Dragged? Chelsea get dragged? Nah, not happening. Listen, I've been chilling with my pina colada, folding my feet on top of the cushion and just watching how the other teams behind us have been trying to finish fourth place. Because I keep saying it is a fourth place race for those guys. And we're not going to be dragged into it. We're not fighting for fourth place. We're already in the top four. So there's no fight here. We missed our chance trying to challenge for the title. And it's all about trying to galvanize our team and making sure that the players that are playing for Chelsea are playing better. Because we're just trying to build that form into next season, in my opinion. But we're not going to get dragged in that fourth place battle. Not happening. I don't see that happening in Chelsea.
You know the battle for fourth place is between your fellow London rivals.
I know.
And with the form you guys are showing, do you think you guys can develop that level of consistency now for the end of the season to solidify that third position? Like you're saying,
I think the top position is already solidified at this point in time. It's Chelsea is now focused on trying to win at least another trophy before the end of the season. Hopefully, the Champions League. Because I still believe in Tuchel. I think if those players act right, follow his instructions, and bring their A game, I think we should be able to go through against Real Madrid. If not, then, you know, it was fun while it lasted. We become another participant in the league, in the Champions League. But in terms of getting dragged into fourth place, I never for one second thought that Chelsea would be dragged to second place. Because if you look at the round of games that Chelsea has versus the other teams that are supposedly trying to get into top four, Chelsea's fixtures are not difficult compared to the Gunners that have lost their head. 1 second at Teta in, another second at Teta out. 1 second we have the star boy, another second star boyish crap. It's just confusion there. How can a club that is confused want to now sit third place? I don't see it happening. It's not happening. Tottenham, on the other hand, I think they have a manager that would get them fourth because he's experienced in the league. I've been saying that Tottenham might get fourth as soon as Conte stepped in. I know people have been saying that, oh, he wants to leave the club. I think because English is not his first language, you might just be misinterpreting what he's saying or is trying to convey. But I see Tottenham getting fourth place. Arsenal fifth, as I predicted from the beginning of the season. I think they've been the only consistent team since the beginning of the season. Man United, they've lost their heads. And I've been saying it, that journey that Liverpool took 30 years for them before they were able to win another league title. Man United is running through that right now. And if they don't get their acts right, they will probably spend at least 30 years or more. Because Newcastle has come to the picture and they have money to spend. But Chelsea getting dragged into the fourth place now, not happening. Don't see it happening.
Okay. I see Franklin believes in miracles. So, because you're speaking about the Champions League, Chelsea can basically turn that result around. But we'll be talking about that at the end of the show. So, speaking about miracles, is there any updates regarding the Chelsea ownership situation? Is there something that you can share with us concerning that subject matter?
To be honest, no update. I think the fact that this has been dragging. They did extend the deadline for the proposal from Monday to Thursday. So I think it's up until Thursday before we'll know what the situation is. At the moment, it's still the same usual suspects that are vying to get involved in owning Chelsea Football Club. But until then, nothing has changed at this point. It's just still the same status.
Okay, but out of the candidates that are there, the bidders, who do you think is strong favourites to get the ownership?
Sadly, it looks like it might be the... the names have slipped out of my head now. The Ricketts, that's the one. Me personally, I just want the club just to be sold so I can just move on to other serious business. I know there have been allegations about them being... is it homophobic? Or is it xenophobic? But the person that has been accused is not part of the team that is bidding for Chelsea. And again, he also apologized at the time he made that statement. But I don't know. I just want the club to be sold so we can just move on to better things and focus on football.
All right. Cheers, Franklin. Cheers. Thanks for that. Moving on, the last subject matter we have on our hands. Ad, talk to me about the title race. what do you think about Liverpool's performance against Manchester City?
Yo, can you hear me? First of all?
Yes, we can. Louder.
Yeah. Louder.
Good. It's funny, man. I'm just listening, bro. Hearing mid-off talks, some people pumping their chests, fighting for top four. I'm hearing some people dreaming of comeback, even though they're already knocked out. It's a funny world, bro. Listen, all right. Let's talk about the elite side of the table. Where we're based at the moment. Yesterday, first of all, I'll humble myself, it wasn't the greatest result. Even performance on our side in terms of the first half. The first half was shambolic, man. It was terrible. I think for me, I'm disappointed because I know my team can play a lot better than they did yesterday. But I actually put the blame on the team in terms of the performance, but also Jurgen Klopp. I think he got the selection all wrong, man. And Klopp is really good when it comes to selections, but I think this time he might have played his card a little bit too wrong over Guardiola. He played Jota in the game, and you know Jota's good at what he does. He's a goalsman, but I don't think that's what we needed in that game. In that game, we needed Bobby Firmino, someone that can drop deep into the midfield and link up play. Because what happened was, and I'm not going to take anything away from Guardiola. They were on us. They came to try and win that game, and fair play to them. It's the Etihad, so they came at a very high level. And from the get go, I think our team struggled with that because we're normally the team that does that. We're normally the team that we try and set off early and show the high momentum that we're trying to win the game early. And more times away, which is interesting because I think Guardiola did what we normally do to them is we try and blow people away from early. And I think with City, had they had the right, say, like the attacker of Harry Kane or someone of that caliber, they could have buried us in that second half. But once again, I have to also, as much as my team didn't perform in that first half, I've got to give my team credit again for the mentality that they have. Gone into second half now and somehow we're still in this game and they come back out. And I thought the second half was a lot decent. It wasn't our best performance again, but it was a lot decent than what we normally had seen. And I think we could have nicked it. City had chances. We could have had chances, and it was just one of those games where, at the top, it's the championship game. It could have swung anyway. Even though it wasn't our best performance, it could have swung anyway. But I think when it's all said and done, and we don't know for now, I think at the moment, it's not the worst result, but it's not the best result for us as well. We're still in it, we've just got to see what happens next. But I think had we lost that game, I think that would have hurt even more because the team didn't perform to the level they can do and we would have been out of this whole situation. But we're still in it for now. And then we go from there, really. But, we go from there, really.
Okay, so you touched on Klopp's selection for the game, and you basically made the point that his selection wasn't good enough in terms of the way the game actually panned out. So we saw the likes of Fabinho. I think he had a shocking game. I've never seen Fabinho that bad. Then we saw the likes of Trent being exploited once again. So, like, going forward, now that we are in the crucial stage of the season, do you think, like, Shegun was coming out with his shirt saying, talking about the high line you guys keep, do you think, like, it's something that you guys need to work on and try to correct? Because other teams are looking at it like something that, look at City exploiting it. It's something that other teams will be working on and trying to exploit when they face you guys.
Yo, so it's a good question. But what some people need to realize, and I think the high line is a problem. We need to probably look at that in terms of dropping it back a little bit. But some of these teams, a lot of these teams, you're not City. You've not got the caliber of players like City do. So yes, City had us on ropes, and Fabinho didn't look that great yesterday, which once again is Klopp's fault because we had no ball retention up front. Had we had more retention up front, Fabinho doesn't look out of place like he normally does when we play other teams. We will still concede chances because that's what comes with a higher line, but it's high risk, high reward. You're going to create multiple other opportunities going forward as well. So no matter who pumps their chest out, it doesn't matter because even you might have one or two quality, but City's quality is the whole overall team. You've got players that can play those long diagonals that catch out Trent and also our centre-back pairings. But not every team possesses that quality. And that's why I think we get away with it majority of the time. But when you come across teams like City and so like that, they can punish you in situations. But once again, it's just one of those. Jurgen Klopp is a stubborn manager, but this is what makes the elite the elite. Like, he knows his way. He can get caught out, but at the same time, he knows that his style of play can cause a lot of damage as well. And we saw that yesterday. You know, City got in, had loads of chances, but at the same time, even though people don't highlight that much, we were in for quite a few chances as well. That game could have swung either way. Either way, Jota had multiple chances. Salah wasn't his best game, but, you know, any other day, it could be different. And the great thing about football is we get to see it again. We'll see it again over the weekend when we play them in the FA Cup, and I presume we're going to play that high line again, and we'll see what the outcome will be from there.
All right. So, the burning question, the question everyone is asking. So, who do you think needed that game more? Who do you think needed that game? Who do you think needed that win, that victory more? Was it City or was it Liverpool? And do you think if it was Liverpool, do you think they missed a big opportunity there?
100%. In hindsight, listen, Liverpool, I said going into that game, it was a must win. It was a must win, and it was terrible the way we performed. Like, I don't mind drawing or losing if we perform to the level that we normally perform at. But the fact that we didn't perform to our level, it's disappointing on the performance. Now, if we're talking about the results, it's not a bad result because had we lost that game, we would have been out of this whole conversation because they would have been 4 points ahead. Now there's still a point ahead and there's still a lot of games to go. And yes, we have got the harder running. I'm not going to deny that. The likes of Spurs, and even though United are off pace, these are big games. Anything can happen on those days. But at the same time, you can't guarantee me that City's going to win every single game. There's a high possibility they can, but there is also a possibility that they can drop points. So as long as we have that, you know, as long as we have that available and we do our job, we'll just see what happens towards the end of the season. But I do think the game itself, it was a loss on Liverpool's side because had we won that game, we would have been ahead of them. But it is what it is, man.
Okay. So now you guys have, there's still a lot of games to go. You guys have some interesting fixtures. I think the Manchester United ones is curtains, like Harun said. Then you still have Spurs to play. Spursy, we know who they love sitting back and exploiting high lines. And you still have some interesting games. So do you think, like, there's the title race is still on from now to the end of the season? Like, do you think you guys still have a chance to seal the victory in the end?
100%. I also think it depends on the fixtures in terms of the timing. If we play, I haven't checked it yet, but it'd be interesting to see. If we play before City and get those 3 points before City, it'll be interesting to see what the pressure does to them. I mean, listen, I'm not going to shit on City, man. City, even what we saw yesterday, man, what Guardiola's done, man, they're a world-class team, man. They are one of the best that we've seen in our era. But I do think the City team can be beaten on their day. And I actually think the City team don't lose games against bigger teams. I think where they drop points is against these smaller teams, which they have in their runnings, the Southamptons, the Crystal Palace. And they don't lose games, they just draw some of those games. And that's the reason why we can turn around and say it was a bad result. But it might turn out to be a great result if City end up drawing against one of these small teams. So we never know. And for me, as long as we're still in the conversation, I would take that not being in the conversation like some other teams. So it's blessed.
All right. Cheers, Az. Thank you for that.
No worries.
Okay, so guys, we've come to almost the end. We've wrapped up everything that we tried to talk about. So let's look at some Champions League fixtures. Basically, we just give our predictions, then we end the show. So we have where is it? We have Chelsea. Like Franklin is saying. Wait. Let me land on the point. I know you're eager, but well, we have Chelsea, who's already like on the back foot in terms of trying to get to the next round. So let me hear you guys' prediction. I think we start from Segun, then we move around the room, then we end the show. Segun, what do you think about Bayern Villarreal? Do you think Bayern can switch it up and go to the next round?
Yeah, I think Bayern scored early and then they cruised to a 4-0 victory.
Okay. What about Chelsea? Now, do you think there's a miracle there, like Franklin's prediction?
I mean, we did our honest, and I've said it before, and I'm going to say it clearly now. I think Chelsea win in extra time. The game is 3-1 in normal time, goes to extra time, and they win it either on penalties or with an extra goal. But they go through.
Wait. Who go through? I didn't hear you.
Chelsea go through.
So you're believing in the London miracle?
I believe that Real Madrid, Chelsea will get a tactics right this time and they'll play a aggressive, fast-paced game and they'll outrun Real Madrid and the old legs won't be able to handle it. And it'll take them into extra time and then they'll just crumble.
All right, fair enough. What about Liverpool Benfica? I think that's wrapped already.
Liverpool will be sleeping. Benfica will do what they want to do, but it means nothing. Liverpool will go for it.
Okay. So do you see Atleti doing anything against City? Is there a comeback?
That's a tough one. I it's going to be difficult for City. That could also go to extra time because Atleti's the worst game that they will play. They're going to have to really dig in to get a result there. I want City to win, but will they win? Yeah, I'm going to start with City.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Okay, so Harun, which fixture do you think there will be an upset in out of all of them you've seen? All of them that I mentioned. Which one do you think there will be an upset in?
None of them, to be honest with you. I think Villarreal will get beaten, so that's not going to be an upset. Bayern Munich will put 3-4 past them. That's their problems at the Allianz. Bayern Munich are different beasts. Chelsea, they're not going through. That's very wishful thinking. They need to score 2 goals and keep it 2-0. And they've been consistent. Don't get fooled by the 6-0 victory against Southampton. They're not going to keep a clean sheet against Real Madrid at home in the Bernabeu. So we saw what happened to PSG. I think Real Madrid are going to go through. I think Liverpool will get through as well. I think Benfica, I think the 3-1 killed off the game. If it was 2-1... maybe Benfica had something to do, but I think it's going to be too much for Benfica to go through. And what was the other game left?
Atleti, Man City.
Oh, Atleti, Man City. Well, you know what? With Atleti, you never know because they could just shithouse a 1-0 win and take it to extra time. So they're a very strange team. They're gonna do what they do: park the bus, look to get one chance. City are not going to get the same space they got against Liverpool. So we'll see what happens with that one. But I think the only upset that is likely to happen this week may be Atleti taking it to extra time. But I still think City will get through eventually. I think the overall better side, unless Pep overthinks it, unless he does something silly, you know, unless they don't take their chances. But yeah, I don't think there's going to be any kind of upset happening. And the most likeliest will be the Man City game, if it was to happen.
All right. Thank you, Arun. So Franklin, I know you've already set your mind on a miracle. So what about the other fixtures? Do you think there will be another miracle
in any of the other fixtures? So in terms of miracle, I'm happy that Shevni is back in Chelsea, but it's difficult for me to see Chelsea actually going through. They might win the game, but I don't know whether they'll do enough to go through. But we'll wait and see, because I'm not going to be fooled by that performance against Southampton, because that's just only Southampton. The Liverpool-Benfica game, Liverpool is done and dusted. At Anfield, we know what the temperature is like at Anfield. Don't think, as much as Benfica also reds, unless they are going to transfer that Bella Goodman course over to Liverpool, I don't think they're going to do anything in Anfield. So that game is done and dusted. Villarreal Bayern, I think that's where the upset is going to happen. Villarreal might actually go through, because as much as Bayern is a strong team, and what's his name, their manager is very, what would I use to describe him? He's a very, the word has escaped my head, but either way, he's not pragmatic enough to actually see that game through, I believe. I think Good Evening would definitely greet Bayern and go through over that time. And City Madrid, man, Madrid would try all the tricks in the book, all the fouls, every Machiavellian trick. They will still not beat City. City will still pack them at their own stadium. So City is going through on that time. That's how I see how the pictures pan out.
All right. Thank you, Franklin. So, Ad, I know you're sitting in the driving seat. You're already comfortable. But do you think an upset will happen?
You know what? I agree with Franklin, bro. This Villarreal one, I think it's going to shock everyone, because all season, Bayern have been going away, losing games, coming home and beating teams. But I don't think it's going to run like that this time. I think this time, when you're this stage in the Champions League, I don't think you can play those games like that. I think Villarreal is going to do a masterclass. Sit in deep, hold off for dear life, and then hit them on the counter-attack. And I think they're going to punish Bayern.
Sneak his way into the semi-final. Hey, listen. Look at that.
You give me Villarreal. I don't mind, fam. I'm not complaining, bro. Listen. I think that's going to be a shocker. I think it's going to be a shocker, but I think Villarreal is going to do it. Liverpool-Benfica, you know what? We should get the job done, but I'm not sleeping on Benfica, because I do believe that they still will come and press us, and it all depends on what team Jurgen Klopp fields. But I think we still got more than enough to get that job done. Madrid-Chelsea. Big game. I think Chelsea are going to come out on fire in that game. But I think Benzema is going to kill them off again, differently. And the reason I say that is because people talk about Chelsea's opportunities in that first leg. But people never talk about the opportunities that Benzema missed and Vini missed as well. And I think that Real Madrid team, they're just very drilled in when it comes to these type of games. I think their experience is going to be enough to get them over the line. So I think Chelsea are going to huff and puff in that game, but I think Madrid are going to end up killing them off. And then the last one, Atleti and Man City. I think Man City are in for a shocker as well. I think they're going to have to work their socks off to win that game. They will win it, but I think Atleti are going to equalise, and it's going to go to extra time, and then City will probably get the win from there. But I don't think it's going to be an easy game for City at all, in my opinion. And if I miss anyone, that's the ties there.
That's it. For football's sake, I hope Bayern goes through so that Liverpool can face it. I don't need any nonsense fixture in the semi-final.
You earn your way, man. That's how it works.
No problem. I hope Bayern ends their way into it. So that's it. We've wrapped up we're at the end of the show already. For our listeners, the podcast is available on the platform, on all platforms. Do share it to your friends if you find anything valuable in it. And you drop us a review as well. So, that's it for myself and my fellow speakers. It's goodbye for now.